Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Podcast. It's been a big week for news, and particularly on the CAP front, with suckler farmers up in arms over one proposed scheme, a new financial modelling on what will happen farm payments. I'm joined in studio by Pat O'Toole and Declan O'Brien from the news team and beef editor Adam Woods. Later on, we'll hear from tillage editor Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh on grain prices and harvest progress, while pedigree editor Shane Murphy reports from the sale of the well-known Celtic Fleckvieh herd in County Laois. But first, let's talk numbers. And Pat, we published some very stark figures from the Department of Agriculture modelling in this week's paper. Talk us through some of the headlines there.
Yeah, I suppose, I think farmers have had this dawning, unfolding awareness that the combination of convergence, the eco schemes and CRIS would mean that higher recipients on above average acres would be pretty hard hit by the changes in CAP. But there's knowing that, and then there's putting an actual figure on it. So straight to the figures. If you look at someone with 40 hectares and reasonably high value, well, high value current BPS entitlements of 473 per hectare. Now that 473 per hectare includes greening. So that would be not that untypical of someone with sucklers who would have been finishing the beef and claiming all the subs during the reference years. So that person is currently getting €18,920 in 2021. And it must be borne in mind that that's a significant fallback in payments from the, through the Cholos reform. So they would have been getting between 23 and 24,000 back in 2016. That 18,920 in 2023, the first year of the new system, will fall to €15,420, best case scenario, a 3,500 drop, or in a worst case scenario, €14,520. So what does best case and worst case scenario mean? Well, best case scenario is 85% convergence and a CRIS or front loading payment of 5% paid out on the first 30 hectares. Worst case scenario is CRIS at 10% played out on the first 30 hectares and 100% full convergence of entitlements, where every entitlement will have the same value, which would be €165 by 2026. And the movement towards that would see a sharper reduction in high entitlements in 2023. But what the department didn't do in their modelling was bring it on to 2026 and show where the eventual, they love talking about the direction of travel. Well, what's the destination of the journey? And the destination for this farmer, remember, €18,920 in 2021. In 2026, best case scenario, €12,300. That's a drop of €6,580 a year, which is a cut of over 30%. Worst case scenario, 10,480, a cut of €8,440, nearly a halving of CAP payments in the next 5 years. And that would happen between 2023 and 2026. And remember, this is happening to the suckler farmer, the dry stock farmer, predominantly on those higher payments, those farmers are 90% reliant on direct payments for their income. So when we talk about a cut in direct payments of 6,500, we're talking of an income loss of more than 5,000 on these farms. It's seismic.
And Pat, not all of this is set in stone yet. So the department is running the town hall meetings. You mentioned some options there on CRIS, which is the front loading for small farms, as I call it. What's still to play for, or what can farmers, what's still within their power to change?
Well, the department, like I said, the minimum model is 5%. The maximum model will be 10%. In other words, 10% of what? 10% of Pillar 1 payments, which is 1.2 billion. So you're talking about 119 million if it's the high option, 10% being put into CRIS. Or if it's only 5% being diverted into CRIS, that's about 59 million euros taken out of every farmer's, 10% of every farmer's current pot going to that, just the same way as the 25% of everyone's current pot will go to eco schemes. That's known. So while there are options, it will be either 5 or 10%, and it will be either paid out on the first 10 hectares, the first 20 hectares, or the first 30 hectares. The department's modelling is all based on the premise that they will opt for the first 30 hectares. The average farm size of applicants to the basic payment at the moment is around 35 hectares. So most farmers would be happier with that. If it's on the first 10 hectares, the payment will be much more intensive, loaded towards very small farms. And that will be something that the farm organizations, I think, will rebel against, with the exception perhaps of the INHFA, on the grounds that full-time farmers or part-time farmers whose income is predominantly dependent on farming will be disproportionately affected by going for the 10 hectares. In terms of convergence, 85% is the minimum. The maximum is 100%, and the department can opt for anything in between. They're modelling on either 85 or 100%, but the mood music seems to be around minimum convergence, in other words, 85%, which is still a huge transfer of funds. If we take the three things in conjunction, the eco schemes taking 300 million away, the convergence and its movement of a minimum of 13 million a year, that's cumulative, so 13 million of farmers' payments in 2023, 26 million in 2024, and a minimum of 52 million in 2026, and then add in the CRIS at a minimum of 5% or 59 million, you're looking at over 400 million and possibly 500 million, half a billion euros of money shifting between farm and farm. And so there's a lot to play for, but there's a huge amount of money on the table here.
And I suppose the key point, and we always make it, Pat, is none of this is new money. It's coming from one farmer to another, or one group of farmers to another group of farmers. I think it's safe to say that convergence has been a divisive issue, but maybe we weren't quite as we wouldn't have been quite as aware of how CRIS is probably accelerating. Is it magnifying and accelerating convergence much more so than or the movement of money much more so than convergence?
Absolutely. And it'll be a bigger shock to the system, because all of the CRIS will happen in one year, one fell swoop in 2023. So that's why there's such a dramatic effect on payments, whatever model is chosen in 2023. And I think that for farmers who think, you know, that because CRIS has come to the table so late, it really only became a likely policy instrument in March, April. The IFA would have been firmly opposed to any CRIS being introduced as late as May. But the reality is that CRIS is on, not just on the table now, it must happen at some level. And when you combine front loading, convergence and eco schemes, this makes it the most fundamental change to cap payments, I think, in history, certainly since the McSharry reforms in the 1980s.
Pat mentioned a shock to the system. Adam, the suckler farmers got a bit of a shock to the system in the last week. Just remind us, and we did speak about this in last week's podcast, but a particular problem with one of the proposed new schemes in the next cap. Just remind us of what the issue was there.
Yeah, so Katrine, in the last few days, we got confirmation that the cap on suckler cows will be applied to participants in the suckler, we'll say, carbon efficiency programme. That means that anybody that enters into that five-year contract in 2023 won't be able to grow their suckler cow numbers over that five-year period, and they will get penalised if they do, we'll say, increase their suckler cows over that time. There will be a reference period. The department have indicated that that could be over a number of years, so it could be the average cows that you calve in 20 and 21. But in terms of going forward, if I calve 25 cows in 2023 and I only calve 20 cows in 2024, that means that my reference number would be revised down and I'll only get paid on 20. They did make a change on Wednesday night, or they inclined that maybe they will look at that based on farmer opposition to that part of the programme, that they may look at that again. So again, we'll watch that space. But it's received massive anger, massive frustration out there with suckler farmers. I guess they feel that they're going to be the fall guys to facilitate dairy expansion. And I was looking back at some comments that the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnell, made at the IFA AGM earlier this year. And he said that no other sector should bore the cost of dairy expansion. And really, my suckler farmers are saying, well, look at what is this? This is this exactly in terms of cap and suckler cows. They're predominantly in the west of Ireland, predominantly low level of nitrogen being spread, predominantly on, you know, biodiversity, holands, a lot of habitats, and they feel that they're being held out here forced to cut back when other areas of the sector. And look, I've nothing against other areas of agriculture in terms of dairy and or sheep, but there are other sectors there that aren't being penalised like suckler farmers are.
Adam, thanks very much. Declan, you were actually at that meeting that Adam mentioned, the second of the town hall meetings hosted by the Department of Agriculture. Sounds like a change of heart. What was said about that suckler scheme and the controversial cap on cow numbers?
Well, they said there was an acceptance that there was a lot of suckler farmer anger over the initial guidelines that had been proposed. And there was an acceptance that they'd have to be reviewed. Now, they weren't saying that they will be changed or amended, but there's pressure coming on. They know that maybe this is a kind of a step too far and that they'll have to roll back. And I think they didn't announce it last night, but they said that these would be, they stressed that it was a consultation process, that these regulations weren't set in stone and that they wanted farmer opinion, and that they were getting farmers' opinions.
Interestingly, so, one of the talking points of the week has been the fact that farmers feel that they're not able to give their opinion at those town hall meetings. There was a bit of a change between the first and second town hall. Was there much opportunity for farmers to give real feedback at the Wednesday night meeting?
Well, there was a lot of problems in getting farmers mic'd up. I suppose just the way the meetings were actually run, only those who are partaking from the department side microphones were active, and getting people to cleared to ring in from outside proved a difficulty. Some got in, some didn't, but there was farmer reaction, and they did get actual farmer and farm representative feedback.
Yeah, which had been the criticism of the very first meeting, that only Department of Agriculture personnel were able to give the explainers, which obviously is the right way to do it, but there was no active or visible feedback from farmers. Adam, just going back to you, I mean, a bit of a chink of light there on the numbers and the limitations. How do you think farmers will react to that?
Yeah, I think, look, they may react well to it, Katrina, but I think the harm is done here. I know a lot of farmers I've spoken to this week feel that they don't have anybody shouting for them, and they felt they needed a minister to have their backs. And I guess with this proposal coming in, and look, I'd say in terms of the Department of Agriculture and the Minister of Agriculture, be upfront with suckler farmers. If we need to cap suckler cows, if we need to reduce the number of suckler cows in Ireland, come out front and say that and develop some sort of a system where we can reduce numbers. Slipping it in small writing at the end of a scheme like this isn't the way to do it. And the department should have learned their lesson this week in terms of the reaction that's out there among suckler farmers. This is not the way to go about this. And really, I think, look, we need to have a, I suppose, a discussion around where we're going. And I think farmers would have a mature discussion around that if people were upfront with them as regards where we need to go to. And in terms of, we're not denying climate change here. We know that there's issues out there, but we know that suckler farmers can play a vital role in that climate change in terms of other things they can do on their farm through the use of genetics, the use of low emission story spreading, protected urea. There's loads of things there that we can do, and we can be part of that climate change rather than just wipe the slate and take the suckler cows out of there.
Thanks, Adam. Jacqueline, the other big news this week was the Nitrates Action Programme proposals were published. Tell us a little bit about what farmers need to know about changes to slurry and fertiliser requirements.
Well, I suppose the big ticket item on this was that farmers will need a month's extra slurry storage.
That sounds like money to me. Sounds like money.
Well, it's going to be a lot of money. It's going to be a lot of money. The close periods for slurry spreading are moving back from the middle of October to September 30th from 2022 and back to September 15th from 2023. In addition, from January 2022, all new slurry tanks will have to be covered, and that all existing slurry tanks will have to be covered by December 2027. Now, these are proposals again, and they're open to discussion. In addition, another big change on the slurry front is that soil water will have to be separated on dairy farms. There's changes to the allowable periods for spreading that, and also the IFA in its assessment of the proposals claimed that additional storage on farm storage for soil water could cost dairy farmers with an 100 cow herd anything from 20,000 to 30,000. So it's all costs.
It is all costs. Sorry to interrupt you. So to recap, so we're looking at the farmers affected by this will have to pay for a month's extra storage, cover any tanks that are open air lagoon type tanks, I'm guessing. Was there mention of low emission slurry spreading will apply to more farmers?
Yes, that's another requirement. So you're going to be moving from derogation farmers right into ordinary lower intensity farmers being required to use less, to low emission slurry spreading. So I think contractors are going to be scratching their heads on this one as well and saying, okay, where can we get this equipment and how will we be able to do it? Because there has been up to a 6 month waiting time for the purchase of this equipment. So it's going to be headaches all around.
Yeah, and I suppose COVID and Brexit have been an issue for all kinds of machinery manufacturer and supply. Pat, just coming to you, I know that the earlier closing of the period will have a particular impact, will it, for tillage farmers?
Well, it may in terms of the application of slurry at autumn time. I suppose we're evolving. A lot of farmers are moving towards min-till and zero-till operations, particularly min-till. And there is a requirement that shallow cultivation has to be carried out within 7 days of the harvesting of crops to generate green cover. That's becoming a more typical practice, especially where farmers are establishing cover crops for green cover or for grazing or for harvesting. The appropriate time for slurry application may actually be immediately post-harvest for the slurry to be absorbed and incorporated into the soil at the time of when there's good growth and when taken up by those cover crops and utilised by them. So that may be where two of the proposals in these nitrates action plan may work together. But there were also proposals around potatoes, forage maize, late harvested spring cereals and other late harvested crops, looking for appropriate buffers to protect what they call any intersecting water bodies. I don't really understand exactly that, what that means. I don't know many farmers who do. Tillage farmers are busy harvesting at the moment, and I think they'll only digest this down the line. But one thing is for sure, in order to handle slurry in a way that will protect water, our water, and especially our groundwater and our rivers, tillage farmers and dairy and dry stock farmers are going to have to work more closely together. And the land base that tillage provides for slurry application, also, of course, for poultry and the pig sector, the tillage land base is crucial to their futures. They're going to have to work in harmony, and the Nitrates Action Plan is in the middle of all of that.
And just, I suppose, a little bit of a sneak preview of next week's paper, we are looking at, there is a growing public interest in slurry, and in particular slurry from pig farms and where that's getting spread. So we'll have a follow-on on that in next week's paper. And also, as Declan mentions, the low emissions slurry spreading equipment, where is that going to be got and how is it going to be funded? But lads, thanks very much for your time today. We're going to move on next to tillage editor Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh to talk about the hardening of grain prices and how harvesting is progressing or not progressing, depending on where you are in the country.
Andy, it's been a wet week in a lot of places, and it's been a bit of difficult for tillage farmers since we spoke last week on the podcast. Has there been much progress in the fields?
There has been a little, Siobhan, but it's probably fair to say not a lot. Weather stopped harvesting in many parts of the country, but not everywhere. There were certainly bits of crop cut since the middle of last week, I'd say almost all crops now coming under the knife somewhere. There's been an amount of winter wheat cut, albeit a small amount, from Cork right the way through to Meath, probably into Louth as well. Spring barley is now being cut almost everywhere, even though there's relatively little cut. But there's still an amount of winter oats to be cut and quite a bit of oilseed rape to be cut as well. So, and I think the other thing would be little enough progress on straw baling in the past week, because while standing crops could be harvested, there wasn't a lot of drying most days to get straw baled up.
Yeah, so farmers are going to be under a little bit of pressure now. I mean, you know, you said there, oilseed rape, oats, spring barley, wheat, there's a lot of crops ahead of them to be cut. I suppose on the positives, how are yields looking, Andy? I know you have some good reports from winter wheat and spring barley.
In the main, yields are maybe best described as pleasing, Siobhan. That's not to say that there's not a bad field here and there, but on the winter wheats that I've heard to date, and maybe these are the ones that you will hear, but I'm hearing individual field yields from 4.4 to 5.4. Spring barley's generally not much report of anything below 3 ton, even though I know there were some crops down below 3 ton, but a lot of spring barley is yielding well, with 3.5 tons been relatively common, and an occasional 4 being talked about for blocks of land as well, not small fields, but whole farms in some instances. So if that type of progress continues, then we have a harvest that we can continue to look forward to.
Yeah, growers should be very happy if they're achieving those yields. And what's quality looking like, since I know there's a small amount since the last time we spoke, but what's it looking like?
Quality remains good. I think, good to very good. A comment that I got would be that quality might just be not quite as good as last year as we move into the harvest, but still absolutely good. No issues in the world. Now, there will be worries come real quick on some fronts, because we now will have some crops that are ripe and ready for harvest, and maybe there'll be a few more days before we can get to them. But there would be some concerns where there is evidence of straw breakdown already in some crops. And with so many muggy days about, there might be concerns as well on things like the tetrazoleum test for germination for malting, and maybe even visible signs of sprouting in wheat. Let's hope we don't see them, but they are somewhat of a risk as this muggy weather is kind of set to continue for a few more days before the combines get rolling. But I think one of the things that's definite is that when combines do get rolling again, there will be a lot of crop to be cut, and there'll be a lot of delivery into merchants' yards, so we can expect to see mountains of grain very quickly. But hopefully we can get the wetter stuff dried up quickly to keep it safe, and that what comes after that will be quite dry, because the forecast is reasonably good from the weekend onwards.
Yeah, that's really important that people start to prioritise crops now and prioritise varieties as well. You know, that they watch out for the germination, particularly in malt and barley, and maybe those wheat varieties that are more susceptible to the sprouting. Like wheat, I suppose it's very early in August to be cutting wheat as well, Andy, and early to be cutting spring barley, and still yields are good. You know, generally we kind of think the earlier crops maybe the poorer yielders, but can we expect the trend to keep up as the harvest moves on?
I think the trend will continue. Now, that's not to say that all crops are going to be as good as the yields that we've mentioned, because not all crops are as good as some of those early crops. But I'm hoping that people would get the yield that they would expect, or maybe even a little bit better, so that poor fields surprise, but they won't necessarily be very good crops either. I think the one comment that I would get frequently from people is that they weren't quite sure what to expect because of that burst of heat at the end of grain fill and the speed at which crops seem to move into maturity. But certainly in my experience, going back over the years, both spring barley and winter wheat in particular, they really thrive in hot conditions. It's almost as if they have a turbocharger. So while the temperature will bring forward the date of maturity and harvest, it disproportionately increases the rate of grain fill on those days. Like, it's, as I say, it's as if a turbocharger cuts in to make the engine work harder in those high temperatures. And while temperatures were hot for us humans, I think they weren't really beyond the point at which they were too hot for our crops. At least the ones that weren't suffering moisture deficiency because of ground conditions.
Okay, so we've high yields, and it's hard to believe we've high prices as well. Or, well, I suppose that's all relative to how you regard your prices, but they've gone up again this week, Andy.
Yeah, look, when the prices picked up last week and we talked about them last week, it was always a little bit awkward to be sure where they're going to hold or where they're going to drop again. But they were being driven by different drivers last week, and it would seem that the drivers have changed. We would have mentioned before that all year, increasing maize prices were the major driver of higher prices for European producers, particularly Irish producers only growing wheat, barley and oats. But in the past 3 weeks to a month, that scene has changed. And now it's wheat that's tending to be the driver of prices, with significant problems in the spring wheat crop in North America, even though it's not a big crop overall. So you could argue it shouldn't be having a very big effect. But beside North America is Canada, and it too was affected by that dryness. So you have two very big milling wheat exporting countries that are now beginning to light a fire under the milling wheat business, which is dragging up feed wheat. And we have to be careful about the fact that those two prices can and should separate. But in the past, we've had cheap maize there against which our feed wheat would have to compete. That's one big difference this year, that even though maize might be getting a little bit more plentiful globally in the past few weeks based on estimates, the price is still much, much higher than it would have been some years ago. And therefore, we don't have maize there to want to pull feed prices down. And that adds an amount of security in where the price prospects are. Like, at the moment, we're about a fiver up on where we were last week, particularly on wheat. Barley probably Well, barley wouldn't be the whole fiver up. Indeed, depending on where you were and who was buying it, you might not even get much above last week's price. But you're now looking at wheat running around 235 a ton. You know, should people sell today? Should they hold on? That's the how long is a piece of string question. But, you know, for anyone doing business, there's nothing wrong with those prices to lock into them today if you chose to do so, if you were getting those offers.
Yeah, so prices are positive at the minute. And I suppose farmers who aren't locking into prices and are waiting on that harvest price, there's still room for ups and downs in the market. I suppose one market that all farmers are interested in particular at the minute is straw. And not much has changed really in the past week on straw, only that it's getting to a stage in the harvest where we're now seeing straw on the ground as we see rain coming down. So there's going to be a bit more work in saving it.
Yes, in all the conversations I've had in the week, there's nobody suggesting that the price of straw is going to go up. But neither is there anybody saying that there's any reason for the price of straw to go down. Lots of people on the buyer side are happy enough to be getting the prices that they're getting of around 20 euro for a 4x4 out of the field. And they're willing and acknowledge the need for that because it's also helping them in another way by helping to reduce the amount of carbon emissions that they have to account for across their sector. So, you know, I think that we're going to go for a while yet anyway before we will see any significant change one way or the other on straw prices. But if it continues to be awkward to save it, that could change the perspective on how people view the straw market. If it's going to be much more difficult to save it, it's a lot more easy to just turn on the chopper and save yourself that trouble. Particularly if you're cutting now ahead of another winter crop and you don't know if you could manage to get the straw saved. But the forecast seems to be better for next week. So hopefully those who want to save straw will be able to save it at minimum cost and hassle.
And finally, today we go to County Laois, where our pedigree editor Shane Murphy attended the sale of the Celtic Fleckvieh herd owned by Ger and Angela Brickley.
Here in County Laois, Ger and Angela Brickley's farm for their Fleckvieh dispersal sale, and I'm joined by Dennis Barrett, auctioneer for the day. Very good sale, Dennis.
Yeah, super sale, Shane. I think it was indicative of the selection policy that Angela and Ger have done over the last number of years. People appreciated it, and the animals, they got the reward today. Tremendous stride.
I suppose 120 lots, probably the biggest Fleckvieh sale in Ireland to date. And I suppose, is it your first?
Yeah, my first Fleckvieh sale. It was different, yeah. But it was an exciting sale. Very well attended. Bought online, 500 people, I think, online through your own app, Mark Bids, which was very impressive and worked very well. And then we had a big on-site audience as well, so it all added to it.
Excellent. And a few very good prices. I see one cow's after making 5.7, but I suppose a testament to the quality that's on show.
Absolutely. She was probably one of the headliners, 5.7. Great price for her, in line with her pedigree and what she has done. But then her daughter coming in after making 5 shows that the depth of pedigree is also there, and there's a future for the Fleckvieh.
And I suppose, just touching on that point, I suppose relatively new to Ireland, but growing year on year, I suppose. And was there a lot of buyers from all over Ireland today?
Yeah, I think the length and breadth of the country, we had buyers from Northern Ireland and probably, I'd say, 70% of the other counties all in attendance. I'm not sure of the registration online just at the moment, but on site. And it would be, I suppose, a good indication of where the breed is going and what the breed offers as an alternative, maybe, in the dairy sector.
And I suppose that was matched as well. I think it was all but one lot sold today, was it? One maiden heifer, so just testing that. On your own side, have you any sales coming up?
We've a couple of Angus sales coming up. We've an Angus sale, a very big Angus sale for Matthew Goulding on the 18th of September. That's going to be a great opportunity for people. We've a dairy sale on the 24th for 4 well-known prominent Cork breeders. It's going to be in Kenturk Mart. That's a collective auction, just short of 100 head in that as well. And then we're into the normal cycle of sales again in the autumn series.
And just, there seems to be a lot more on farm sales since COVID, I suppose. added to by being able to do on-farm sales and getting that online billing. How's pillory sales been so far this year?
Absolutely. I think that they've been in line with commercial sales. People have confidence in the market and they've been going very well. The on-farm sales have been helped by MarkBid's technology, which has really helped us also bringing it onto the farm. You know, you get the following of the Farmer's Journal and you get MarkBid's and the technology it offers, coupled with the demand that's there for these real quality animals that Irish farmers have and just need a marketplace to be able to get them out there. And I think that's just been proven this spring.
Thanks a minute.
The Irish Farmers Journal podcast, online at farmersjournal.ie and on iTunes and Spotify every Wednesday.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.